So they both went on, and ignorance he came after. Now when they had passed him a little way, they entered into a very dark lane, where they met a man whom seven devils had bound with seven strong cords, and were carrying of him back to the door that they saw on the side of the hill. Now good Christian began to tremble, and so did Hopeful his companion. Yet, as the devils led away the man, Christian looked to see if he knew him, and he thought it might be one Turnaway that dwelt in the town of Apostasy. But he did not perfectly see his face, for he did hang his head like a thief that is found. But being gone past, Hopeful looked after him, and espied on his back a paper with this inscription, "Wanton Professor and Damnable Apostate." Then said Christian to his fellow, "Now I call to remembrance that which was told me of a thing that happened to a good man hereabout. The name of the man was Little Faith, but a good man, and he dwelt in the town of Sincere. The thing was this: at the entering in of this passage, there comes down from Broadway Gate a lane called Dead Man's Lane, so called because of the murders that are commonly done there. And this Little Faith, going on pilgrimage, as we do now, chanced to sit down there and slept. Now there happened at that time to come down that lane from Broadway Gate three sturdy rogues, and their names were Faint Heart, Mistrust, and Guilt, three brothers. And they, espying Little Faith where he was, came galloping up with speed. Now the good man was just awakened from his sleep, and was getting up to go on his journey. So they came up all to him, and with threatening language bid him stand. At this, Little Faith looked as white as a clout, and had neither power to fight nor fly. Then said Faint Heart, "Deliver thy purse." But he, making no haste to do it, for he was loath to lose his money, Mistrust ran up to him, and thrusting his hand into his pocket, pulled up thence a bag of silver. Then he cried out, "Thieves! Thieves!" With that, Guilt, with a great club that was in his hand, struck Little Faith on the head, and with that blow felled him flat to the ground, where he lay bleeding as one that would bleed to death. All this while the thieves stood by, but at last, they hearing that some were upon the road, and fearing lest it should be one Great Grace that dwells in the city of Good Confidence, they betook themselves to their hills, and left this good man to shift for himself. Now after a while Little Faith came to himself, and getting up, made shift to scrabble on his way. This was the story. But did they take from him all that ever he had? No, the place where his jewels were they never ransacked, so those he kept still. But, as I was told, the good man was much afflicted for his loss, for the thieves got most of his spending money. That which they got not, as I said, were jewels. Also he had a little odd money left, but scarce enough to bring him to his journey's end. Nay, if I was not misinformed, he was forced to beg as he went, to keep himself alive, for his jewels he might not sell. But beg and do what he could, he went, as we say, with many a hungry belly, the most part of the rest of the way. But is it not a wonder they got not from him his certificate, by which he was to receive his admittance at the celestial gate? No, 'tis a wonder, but they got not that, though they missed it not through any good cunning of his, for he, being dismayed with their coming upon him, had neither power nor skill to hide anything. So 'twas more by good providence than by his endeavour that they missed of that good thing. But it must needs be a comfort to him that they got not this jewel from him. It might have been great comfort to him had he used it as he should. But they that told me the story said that he made but little use of it all the rest of the way, and that because of the dismay that he had in their taking away of his money, indeed he forgot it a great part of the rest of his journey. And besides, when, at any time it came into his mind, and he began to be comforted therewith, then would fresh thoughts of his loss come again upon him, and those thoughts would swallow up all. Alas, poor man, This could not but be a great grief unto him. Grief, aye, a great grief indeed. Would it not have been so to any of us, had we been used as he, to be robbed and wounded too, and that in a strange place as he was? 'Tis a wonder he did not die with grief, poor heart. I was told that he scattered almost all the rest of the way, with nothing but doleful and bitter complaints, telling also to all that overtook him, or that he overtook in the way as he went, where he was robbed, and how, who they were that did it, and what he lost, how he was wounded, and that he hardly escaped with his life. But 'tis a wonder that his necessities did not put him upon selling or pawning some of his jewels, that he might have wherewith to relieve himself in his journey. Thou talkest like one upon whose head is the shell to this very day, for what should he pawn them, or to whom should he sell them, in all that country where he was robbed? His jewels were not accounted of, nor did he want that relief which could from thence be administered to him. Besides, had his jewels been missing at the gate of the celestial city, he had, and that he knew well enough, been excluded from an inheritance there, and that would have been worse to him than the appearance and villainy of 10,000 thieves. Why art thou so tart, my brother? Esau sold his birthright, and that for a mess of pottage, and that birthright was his greatest jewel. And if he, why might not little faith do so too? Esau did sell his birthright indeed, and so do many besides, and by so doing exclude themselves from their chief blessing, as also that caitiff did. But you must put a difference betwixt Esau and little faith, and also betwixt their estates. Esau's birthright was typical, but little faith's jewels were not so. Esau's belly was his god, but little faith's belly was not so. Esau's want lay in his fleshly appetite. Little faith's did not so. Besides, Esau could see no further than to the fulfilling of his lusts. "For I am at the point to die," said he, "and what good will this birthright do me?" But little faith, though it was his lot to have but a little faith, was by his little faith kept from such extravagances, and made to see and prize his jewels more, than to sell them as Esau did his birthright. You read not anywhere that Esau had faith, no, not so much as a little. Therefore no marvel if, where the flesh only bears sway, as it will in that man where no faith is to resist, if he sells his birthright, and his soul, and all, and that to the devil of hell, for it is with such as it is with the ass, who in her occasions cannot be turned away. When their minds are set upon lusts, they will have them, whatever they cost. But little faith was of another temper. His mind was on things divine. His livelihood was upon things that were spiritual and from above. Therefore, to what end should he that is of such a temper sell his jewels, had there been any that would have bought them, to fill his mind with empty things? Will a man give a penny to fill his belly with hay? Or can you persuade the turtle dove to live upon carrion like the crow? Though faithless ones can for carnal lusts pawn or mortgage, or sell what they have, and themselves outright to boot, yet they that have faith, saving faith, though but a little of it, cannot do so. Here therefore, my brother, is thy mistake. I acknowledge it, but yet your severe reflection had almost made me angry. Why, I did but compare thee to some of the birds that are of the brisker sort, who will run to and fro in trodden paths, with the shell upon their heads, but pass by that, and consider the matter under debate, and all shall be well betwixt thee and me. But a Christian, these three fellows, I am persuaded in my heart, are but a company of cowards. Would they have run else, think you, as they did, at the noise of one that was coming on the road? Why did not little faith pluck up a greater heart? He might, methinks, have stood one brush with them, and have yielded when there had been no remedy. That they are cowards, many have said, but few have found it so in the time of trial. As for a great heart, little faith had none, and I perceive by thee, my brother, hadst thou been the man concerned, thou art but for a brush, and then to yield. And verily, since this is the height of thy stomach, now they are at a distance from us, should they appear to thee, as they did to him, they might put thee to second thoughts. But consider again, they are but journeymen thieves. They serve under the king of the bottomless pit, who, if need be, will come into their aid himself, and his voice as the roaring of a lion. I myself have been engaged at this little faith once, and I found it a terrible thing. These three villains set upon me, and I, beginning like a Christian to resist, they gave but a call, and in came their master. I would, as the saying is, have given my life for a penny, but that, as God would have it, I was clothed with the armour of proof. Aye, and yet, though I was so harnessed, I found it hard work to quit myself like a man. No man can tell what in that combat attends us, but he that hath been in the battle himself. Well, but they ran, you see, when they did but suppose that one great grace was in the way. True, they have often fled, both they and their master, when great grace hath appeared, and no marvel, for he is the king's champion. But I trow you will put some difference between little faith and the king's champion. All the king's subjects are not his champions, nor can they, when tried, do such feats of war as he. Is it meet to think that a little child should handle Goliath as David did, or that there should be the strength of an ox in a wren? Some are strong, some are weak, some have great faith, some have little. This man was one of the weak, and therefore he went to the walls. I would it had been great grace for their sakes. If it had been he might have had his hands full, for I must tell you that though great grace is excellent good at his weapons, and has and can, so long as he keeps them at sword's point, do well enough with them, yet if they get within him, even faint heart, mistrust, or the other, it shall go hard. But they will throw up his heels, and when a man is down, you know, what can he do? Whoso looks well upon great grace's face shall see those scars and cuts there, that shall easily give demonstration of what I say. Yea, once I heard he should say, and that when he was in the combat, we despaired even of life. How did these sturdy rogues and their fellows make David groan, mourn, and roar? Yea, Heman and Hezekiah too, though champions in their day, were forced to bestir them, when by these assaulted. And yet, notwithstanding, they had their coats soundly brushed by them. Peter, upon a time, would go try what he could do, but though some do say of him that he is the prince of the apostles, they handled him so, that they made him at last afraid of a sorry girl. Besides, their king is at their whistle. He is never out of hearing, and if at any time they be put to the worst, he, if possible, comes in to help them. And of him it is said, the sword of him that layeth at him cannot hold the spear, the dart, nor the habergeon. He esteemeth iron as straw, and brass as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him fly. Sling stones are turned with him into stubble, darts are counted as stubble. He laugheth at the shaking of a spear. What can a man do in this case? 'Tis true, if a man could at every turn have Job's horse, and had skill and courage to ride him, he might do notable things. For his neck is clothed with thunder. He will not be afraid as the grasshopper. The glory of his nostrils is terrible. He poureth in the valley, rejoiceth in his strength, and goeth out to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear, and is not affrighted, neither turneth back from the sword. The quiver rattleth against him, the glittering spear and the shield. He swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage. Neither believeth he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, ha, ha, and he smelleth the battle afar off, the thundering of the captains and the shoutings. But for such footmen as thee and I are, let us never desire to meet with an enemy, nor vaunt as if we could do better, when we hear of others that they have been foiled, nor be tickled at the thoughts of our own manhood, for such commonly come by the worst when tried. Witness Peter, of whom I made mention before, he would swagger, Aye, he would, as his vain mind prompted him to say, do better and stand more for his master than all men, but who so foiled and run down by these villains as he? When therefore we hear that such robberies are done on the king's highway, two things become us to do. First, to go out harnessed, and to be sure to take his shield with us, for it was for want of that he that laid so lustily at Leviathan could not make him yield. For indeed, if that be wanting, he fears us not at all. Therefore, he that had skill hath said, above all, take the shield of faith, wherewith he shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. 'Tis good also that we desire of the king a convoy, yea, that he will go with us himself. This may David rejoice when in the valley of the shadow of death, and Moses was rather for dying where he stood than to go one step without his God. O my brother, if he will but go along with us, what need we be afraid of 10,000s that shall set themselves against us? But without him, the proud helpers fall under the slain. I, for my part, have been in the fray before now, and though, through the goodness of him that is best, I am, as you see, alive, yet I cannot boast of my manhood. Glad shall I be if I meet with no more such brunts, though I fear we are not got beyond all danger. However, since the lion and the bear have not as yet devoured me, I hope God will also deliver us from the next uncircumcised Philistine. Then sang Christian, poor little faith hath been among the thieves, was robbed. Remember this, whoso believes, and gets more faith, shall then a victor be over 10,000, else scarce over 3. Christian and Pilgrim soon meet with Ignorance, who came from the country of Conceit, and for a short time converse with him. Ignorance, who thinks that he too is on the journey to the celestial city, is in fact a false professor of that way. In conversation with the two pilgrims, this is clearly seen by his words and thoughts. Ignorance is quickly offended by their questions and comments. Like so many today, he feels that various paths in religion can all be followed by people, all arriving to the same destination. There is more hope for a fool than for such like him. Next in their journey, they briefly come across a sorry sight in the form of Turnaway, who is from the town of Apostasy. Bunyan describes this man's condition in the most awful nature. It is in the dark lane in which they see this man who has been bound with 7 cords by 7 devils. The element of shame and reproach is in him, as Christian, when looking to see if he knew him, does not see his face clearly. His head did hang like a thief that is found. Given his name and where he is from, it is clear that Bunyan is describing another form of false profession, in its worst form, that of apostasy. Hebrews 6 teaches this for us. Turnaway represents those who turn away from the faith, and despite a public profession, they have in some sense tasted the good things of the gospel, but never savingly believed in Christ. It is a most tragic sight. However, not all sights that discourage mean that a person is outside the household of God. Now in the story, Christian remembers another pilgrim he had heard of. The account took place not far from where these two men were now. This man was called Little Faith, and he was from the town of Sincere. He was robbed and assaulted when resting to sleep. Those who attacked him were faint heart, mistrust, and guilt. It is clear that John Bunyan is describing the assaults that come upon those who, although genuinely in Christ, have yet failed to prepare themselves for the battle. Most likely Bunyan is describing those who, because of little faith and a lack of a walk with God, are weak in the face of trial and temptation. In this attack, Little Faith suffered a great loss, but he did not lose all. We might say that what was lost may be comfort and peace of mind, but the jewels, representing the spiritual rewards which are never taken from us because they are in Christ, remain intact. It is here that we see a big difference between Turnaway and Little Faith. In conversation, Christian and Hopeful disagree on points, but their converse proves to be fruitful and beneficial. We also hear of another called Great Grace, a courageous pilgrim who seems to stand in contrast to Little Faith. He is clothed in the whole armour of God. Hopeful wonders why little faith was not more courageous in the face of temptation. And Christian explains that all trials will differ as to the intensity of them. Furthermore, without the help of the Lord, even those who are great in grace are not immune to the heat of the battle. Christian speaks of David and Peter from the scriptures, men notable for their courage, but also men who bore the scars from the wounds they sustained in their falls.